And good evening. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. My co-producers and colleagues, Christina Thomas and Antoinette Grajeda, will be with me in just a few minutes. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large, new information regarding the New Madrid Fault that runs through eastern Arkansas and created one of the largest earthquakes in North America more than two centuries ago. Plus, we'll spend some time in a popular pumpkin patch in northwest Arkansas and find out why landscape architecture and democracy can have much in common. That's all ahead on this Monday evening edition of Ozarks at Large. This is the fall fundraiser for KUAF. For the past few days, we've been reminding you that the reason we can bring you stories about the region, as well as stories from around the country and around the world from NPR, the reason, the big reason, listeners just like you contribute money to KUAF. Programs like Ozarks at Large, Morning Edition, Fresh Air, and All Things Considered do cost money, and we have to pay for the programs. The single largest part of our programming budget comes from you, listeners just like you. The phone volunteers are home. They have left, but you can still contribute right now. In fact, you can contribute at any time by going to our website, supportkuaf.com. There you'll find answers to all your questions about making a contribution. And if you'd like to become a sustaining member, someone who gives a little bit each month, you can find out how to do that as well at supportkuaf.com. Our goal for this fundraiser, $200,000. It's a lot of money, yes, but it is not an inexpensive proposition to create public radio and to pay for the programs like Morning Edition and Fresh Air. If you have yet to contribute, please consider doing so right now. It's very easy. It's very safe to do so online at supportkuaf.com. And from all of us at Ozarks at Large and KUAF, and from your fellow listener contributors, thank you very much.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, begins its 2013-2014 season under the baton of music director Paul Haas at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, November 16th at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. This opening concert will include Barber's Adagio for Strings, Schubert's Symphony No. 9, and Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 5, featuring British pianist Simon Mulligan. Tickets available at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
In a push to simplify operations at the state's Department of Finance and Administration, Governor Mike Beebe says a new computer system for renewing vehicle registrations has been rolled out this year. Similar to the department's Arkansas Integrated Revenue System, which streamlined the process of tracking daily deposits, fund transfers, and monthly revenue distributions, Governor Beebe says the new driver services and motor vehicle system replaces technology that was more than 40 years old, costly to maintain, and difficult to use.
Nearly 1,000 public employees now utilize the system to issue driver's license and identification cards to support court hearings and to administer driver sanctions and accident reports. The system also permits Arkansans to voluntarily use their driver's license number when registering a vehicle or renewing a motor vehicle license. This allows the system to match all vehicles owned by an individual. That means, for example, that you can now change your address for multiple vehicles and renew your driver's license in a single transaction.
Governor Beebe says the new system has resulted in shorter waiting times at revenue offices, as well as fewer errors made on driver's accounts.
The Arkansas Alumni Association has reached a new milestone. The association's scholarship program will award $1 million to 442 University of Arkansas students for the current academic year. According to the Alumni Association, the scholarship program began in 1990 by giving two students a $1,600 annual award. Funding for the scholarship program comes from the Alumni Association's membership, donors, and from the Razorback Collegiate License Plate Program.
A professor at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith is receiving national distinction with the NCAA. Dr. Keith Fudge is an associate professor of English at UAFS, and he's also the college's faculty athletics representative, meaning he represents the college and faculty in its relationship with the NCAA. Late last week, Fudge was one of 16 fellows selected to represent NCAA Division II athletics, and he was one of three Division II faculty athletic representatives selected to serve nationally on the NCAA steering committee.
The Razorback soccer team went 0-2 this weekend with a loss in its final SEC road match of the regular season at Auburn Friday night, as well as a loss at home yesterday afternoon to Georgia. The Razorbacks are now 11-7 on the season and 4-6 in conference play.
And the Razorback volleyball team didn't have much better luck during the weekend. The Razorbacks dropped a four-set match at Texas A&M Friday night, and the team lost in five sets yesterday at LSU. With those two losses, the team now 13-9 on the season, 6-5 in conference play.
There's a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms in northwest Arkansas tonight, and a 40% chance of showers in the Arkansas River Valley. Expect lows in the mid to upper 50s. 60% chance of showers in northwest Arkansas and a 50% chance of rain in the Arkansas River Valley tomorrow, with highs in the mid-70s. Tomorrow night, there's a 40% chance of showers in northwest Arkansas and a 30% chance of rain in the Arkansas River Valley, with lows in the lower 60s.
This is Ozarks at Large. The United States Geological Survey has issued a new report on the New Madrid seismic zone. The findings, the agency says, are unexpected and significant. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich spoke with the report's lead author, and she has this story.
The New Madrid seismic zone covers southern Illinois, 150 miles south into northeast Arkansas, western Tennessee, and Kentucky, crossing the Mississippi River in three places. The historic epicenter and namesake is New Madrid, Missouri, struck by a series of magnitude 7 to 8 quakes in the winter of 1811 and 12. First-hand accounts describe enormous landslides and sand blows, the ground rising and sinking, the shocks heaving the Mississippi River, creating immense waves in all directions. Massive trembling was reported across a 5,000-square-mile area and could be felt states away. 200 years later, scientists who've been peering 120 miles deep beneath the soft alluvial river valley sands and soils are discovering why the 1800 quakes were so impressive.
That's the type of structure that we don't see anywhere else, even under other nominally seismically active areas of the central or eastern United States.
Dr. Fred Politz is a research geophysicist with the USGS based in Southern California. He specializes in crustal deformation or stress on Earth's surface and long-period seismology.
I've been studying the seismic data from the transportable array of EarthScope.
The transportable array is a moving network of 400 seismographs positioned in a grid pattern across the United States and Alaska. Transmitted data gathered by the Array Network facility at the University of California, San Diego, archived at the IRIS Data Management Center, provides high-resolution imagery of the Earth's deep interior, revealing seismicity potential or earthquake frequency. Dr. Fred Politz and his research colleague, USGS scientist Walter Mooney, using new data produced by the transportable array, can examine various immense fissure zones or rifts, including the Real Foot Rift, a 500-million-year-old geologic formation underlying the New Madrid zone.
And we found that the mantle seismic velocities under the Real Foot Rift, including the New Madrid seismic zone, were unusually low. And this was a surprise, and so there are likely changes in the rock composition. New minerals developed under the Real Foot Rift relative to the hard granitic rocks that surrounded on both sides. And so this compositional change that we believe is present under the mantle of the Real Foot Rift conspires to make it a weaker zone and more susceptible to the large tectonic stresses which are constantly being imposed over the entire region, the central and eastern United States.
The Earth's tectonic plates constantly move like a giant jigsaw puzzle, expanding and contracting, some triggering quakes. Eons ago, the continent tried but failed to break in two in the middle U.S. along the Real Foot Rift. Quakes may also occur at predictable intervals. After the devastating New Madrid event in 1811, a 6.7 quake occurred in 1895 in Charleston, Missouri. Previous to that, a magnitude 6.3 struck Lepanto, Arkansas in the winter of 1843. Paleoseismologists have detected much larger quakes occurring at 500-year intervals.
They have evidence for large earthquakes of similar size and extent as the 1811, 1812 earthquakes occurring in 1450 and 900 AD. So we have not only a long earthquake record that demonstrates this zone is hazardous over basically thousands of years, but also for the first time an explanation about what makes this zone unique in the central United States.
The New Madrid seismic zone is being stressed in two different ways, says Fred Politz. Shortening along the Real Foot Rift fault, as well as strike slip faulting, a compression of two mammoth opposing geologic formations, which commonly cause quakes along the western U.S. But not all scientists agree a big quake is imminent. Northwestern University seismologist Seth Stein has published papers and written a book claiming the New Madrid zone is slowly rebounding from the weight of ancient glaciers.
The view that it's not dangerous would be that the measured deformation from GPS, which allows you to see the ground motions at present over very large areas, this deformation seems to be very, very low and may possibly be recording a signal due to the deglaciation, which is left over from several thousand years ago. But the fact that earthquakes have been happening for a long time in the New Madrid seismic zone, and the area had just 200 years ago the last bunch of large earthquakes, points to it continuing to be a dangerous zone.
Dr. Fred Politz also found the regions more susceptible to external perturbation or distress. So given that we have a major new shale gas play in Arkansas just 200 miles west, which has become quake-prone due to deep underground drilling and injection of lubricating chemicals to unlock methane from shale, could that trigger quakes along the New Madrid? Fred Politz would not concede a linkage, but he did say this.
If you have a weak zone, such as you have in the Real Foot Rift, they will be more susceptible to triggering from nearby earthquake, and we worry about that in California. And elsewhere, whenever we have a moderate earthquake, the question always arises, will that lead to something larger? And if there's a susceptible geologic structure or fault nearby, then that's always a concern.
Small quakes continue to occur along the Fayetteville Shale Play in Arkansas. USGS also issued a new report about a swarm of damaging quakes once stayed over in central Oklahoma, a region historically not prone to quakes. USGS says it may be traced to shale drilling and injection well-induced seismicity. The largest earthquake ever recorded in Oklahoma, a magnitude 5.6, occurred in the fall of 2011, and several magnitude 4 quakes occurred this past spring. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Fred Politz and Walter Mooney's research was published in the journal Earth and Planetary Science Letters. This is Ozarks at Large.
And that's when we realized we had overlooked one small but very important detail. We forgot to ask Sandra which bedroom window was hers.
I've been sheltered all my life by the humane practice of courtship and romantic etiquette. I was unprepared for how the rest of the animal world likes to go about love.
He flicks his wrist, sending the eggs up into the air into two perfectly laid out slow motion backflips. But something goes terribly wrong.
Tales from the South, Saturday afternoon at 3:30 on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We are coming to you this evening during a special fundraising edition of Ozarks at Large. And while the volunteers that are usually here to answer your phone calls have gone home, we're asking anybody that would like to make a contribution to go to our website. That website is supportkuaf.com.
The reason we have these fun drives is because we are a nonprofit public radio station. It's the listeners that put the public in public radio, quite frankly. We have a budget, an annual budget of $1.1 million.
Over $1 million.
Mm-hmm, every year. And we are responsible for raising 88% of that.
Right. That means that 88% of that budget comes from you, our listeners.
It comes from, definitely comes from in-house. Part of that is through grants that we apply for, mm-hmm. but the vast majority of it comes from listeners. Now, that may be local underwriters. You hear us talk about local businesses who underwrite with us.
Support for KUAF
comes from fill in the blank. But the majority comes from listeners like you who take time during the pledge drives to call in or to go online and make their pledge of support time and time again. Now, some people, you know, write that check once a year, twice a year, and they're done. Other people
Give monthly.
They want to be sustaining members. You know, you sign up to give a certain amount every month. So each month that money will be taken out of your checking account or charged to your credit card. Or if you are a University of Arkansas employee, you can do payroll deduct.
Which is what I do because I know, I mean, I can't afford a lot of money. I can't afford a big lump sum, but I know that my $10 a month will add up and that KUAF can count on that money.
Right. You may not be able to give the full $120 mm-hmm. right now, but you give $10 mm-hmm. a month. And by the end of the year, you've given $120 a month. We try to make this as easy and as simple for everyone so that everybody can feel like they can give and they can be a part of this public radio station and they really can make a difference. We want everybody to feel that way. So if you would like to make a pledge and support this community radio station, this public radio station, you can head on over to our website, supportkuaf.com, decide how much you can afford to give and how you would like to pay for that. And it's all right there at the website, supportkuaf.com.
And thank you.
And this is Ozarks at Large for Monday, October 28th, 2013. The economy took center stage in Arkansas last week. Job announcements were made in Springdale, Fort Smith, and elsewhere. There were interviews for new jobs in the Rogers area taking place, and a new poll indicated Arkansans are still concerned about the direction of the state's economy. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas has his weekly recap.
The Arkansas poll conducted by the University of Arkansas shows voter attitudes are more pessimistic than 1 year ago. When asked if the economy was heading in the right direction or wrong direction, 63% of voters said it was heading in the right direction versus 20% who indicated the economy was off track. 1 year ago, 73% of voters said the economy was heading in the right direction, while 17% said it was heading in the wrong direction. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Mike Ross proposed a gradual elimination of the state sales and use tax on partial replacement and repairs of machinery used in manufacturing at a meeting in Arkadelphia on Thursday. Ross said it was one of several targeted taxes he would propose to help job creation in Arkansas. Deltic Timber posted third quarter profits of $5.8 million compared to $3.2 million 1 year ago. Revenues rose from $36.5 million in last year's third quarter to $56.5 million in the current quarterly report. The 80% increase in net income was largely attributed to Deltic's manufacturing segment. Home Bank Shares announced its previously announced $280 million acquisition of Liberty Bank Shares has officially closed. The two bank enterprises both received shareholder approval for the merger on Wednesday. Lots of news on the jobs front. South Coast Baking Company announced it would open a production facility in Springdale, creating 150 jobs, averaging roughly $25 per hour. Irvine, California-based South Coast Baking is one of the nation's leading wholesale manufacturers of frozen bakery products. They have product placement in Sam's Club, Panera Bread, and Mrs. Fields Cookies. Currently distributes products to more than 38 countries. Mars Pet Care announced Wednesday it's investing $50 million to expand its operations in Arkansas with more than 40 new positions at its pet food plant in Fort Smith. Construction has begun, and production is expected to begin on the line this winter. The Mars Pet Care Fort Smith facility employs 125 workers and manufactures Caesar Canine Cuisine, as well as wet pet food for private label brands. North Little Rock-based Advanced Cabling Systems announced an expansion of its building technology integration company, a move that will add 20 to 25 tech jobs with salaries in the $50,000 plus range. Advanced Cabling Systems designs and installs voice, data, and fiber optic and network cabling to commercial buildings. Serco is actively interviewing and hiring some 900 additional workers this week for its new Rogers Data Processing Center. Aside from processing paper applications for the Affordable Health Care Insurance Program, the firm also handles visa processing for immigration and administration work for the U.S. Department of Defense and its family programs. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Arkansas update.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large comes from the Bank of the Ozarks. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
During the fall season, pumpkin patches start popping up across the region. If you turn off Mission Boulevard in Fayetteville onto Old Wire Road and head north, you'll come across the Sequoia United Methodist Church Youth Pumpkin Patch. This is the eighth year orange pumpkins of all shapes and sizes have appeared on the church's west lawn. Amy Field is the youth director at Sequoia United Methodist Church and explains the pumpkin patch serves as a fundraiser for the church's youth. She says some parents involved in the church's youth program had grown tired of events like bake sales that only accumulated small amounts of money throughout the year. One parent discovered an organization called Pumpkin Patch Fundraisers and thought this could be a way to do one big fundraiser as well as reach out to the community.
Pumpkins USA is a company in North Carolina, and they work with farmers all over the country. The farm where we get our pumpkins is in New Mexico. It's a Navajo Indian reservation in Farmington. And what we do is in November, I'll call them and tell them how many pumpkins we want and what dates for next year. And then in August, we'll sit down and make our plan for our pumpkin patch. And then at the beginning of October and the middle of October, we'll get a semi full of pumpkins.
Field says they order pumpkins based on last year's sales. The first year, they ordered a quarter of a semi truck worth of pumpkins, and they ran out of the gourds within 2 weeks. The event has continued to grow, and in recent years, the church has settled on receiving an entire semi full of pumpkins at the 1st of October and three quarters of a semi about 2 weeks later. Field explains the money goes directly to the youth program, which gets a percentage of money based on how many pumpkins are sold.
One of the main things that we do is Ozark Mission Project, which is this wonderful program all over Arkansas with Methodist churches. We sign up and we go to a camp. There are several camps. We choose which one we want to go to. And for a week, you get paired up with four kids, not from your church, and they're your family group. And you go every day and you work on someone's house. You build wheelchair ramps, you scrape and paint. Last year, my family built a porch on a house that had caved in. And as much as it is about helping the people, it's about building relationships. And I never can decide who gets more out of it. The kids get so much out of it. The adults who go with them get so much out of it. And the people that we help, we call neighbors, they forge such really deep relationships, and it means so much to the kids. But they're expensive to go to. It's $250 a kid for chaperones, too. And so what we decided is we will only make them pay a very small portion of that, and then the youth group will pay the rest. So no one ever says, I can't go because I can't afford it. And if they can't afford it at all, then they have a private word with me and they go free. And that goes for all of our events.
The Pumpkin Patch is open 7 days a week, and Youth Director Amy Field says they could not run this fundraiser without having an incredibly supportive church family.
We have so many people who love working out here, and I was just saying the other day, I'm always amazed that even after they end up working on a cold, rainy day, they still volunteer to come out. Retired people will work during the day mostly, some stay-at-home moms, and then the kids are required to come out here and put in some time after school and on weekends to help out. Carry pumpkins, price pumpkins, take pictures of families, move out any that have rotted, that sort of thing.
There's even a tent where volunteers sometimes spend the night just to make sure everything is okay. When the pumpkins arrive from out west, the shipment also includes what are called pricing pumpkins. Customers compare their pumpkin of choice to a pricing pumpkin, and once they find a pricing pumpkin that's similar in size to theirs, they pay the price written on that pricing pumpkin. Field says if you can't decide between two sizes, you'll always pay the lesser amount. The biggest pumpkin costs $30. Smaller pumpkins, labeled Weebies, are available 3 for $2, and some minis are sold 2 for $1. Some pumpkins at the patch are round and smooth, while others are oddly shaped and bumpy, so there are a variety of gourds to please almost anyone's taste. With so many options, what's the preferred pumpkin for the church's youth director?
I like the weird ones. I love the warty ones. I like the misshapen ones. People will come, if they know we're getting a delivery, they'll come and they'll watch them come off the truck because we don't get that many weird ones, so they'll want, oh, if there's any white ones, I'm going to grab it right off the truck. Any veiny ones, I'll grab it right off the truck.
Field says every year they set a goal for their fundraiser, and once they meet that goal, any remaining pumpkins are sold for cheap or even given away for free. If there are any pumpkins left at the end of the fundraiser, church members will take them home, and even some local farmers offer to take them off the church's hands. The pumpkin patch will only be open for a few more days, but during that time, Field says families can come and participate in a fall activity.
This is a great place because it's an experience. I mean, you can get your pumpkins all over town, and sometimes if we don't have what someone's asking for, we'll tell them. You know, we'll tell them someone else has what you're looking for. But this is a place where you can, you know, let your kids drag a wagon around, get some stickers, have some fun, do some family photo ops, and just meet some really nice people. It's a fall experience.
The Sequoia United Methodist Church Youth Pumpkin Patch is scheduled to be open from 10 a.m. through 7 p.m. today through Wednesday. Proceeds will benefit the church's youth program. More information is available by calling 442-8677 or by searching Sequoia UMC Youth Pumpkin Patch on Facebook.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too.
This is a special fundraising edition of Ozarks at Large, a time when we come to you, our listeners, and ask you to support the things that you listen to every day. Our volunteers have gone home, but you can still contribute right now at supportkuaf.com. Antoinette, we just heard a story about fundraising.
Yes.
People volunteering at a pumpkin patch.
Yes.
And volunteering is something that we cover often.
Yes.
On Ozarks at Large.
Yes. We are very fortunate to be able to work with a lot of very deserving organizations in the community. There are lots of nonprofit entities that are run mostly by volunteers, some solely by volunteers. Mm-hmm. And something that a service that I feel like we are able to provide them is I feel like we're very helpful, or at least we try to be, in spreading the word about their events and their causes, because they're all great causes. But when you are on, you know, a small staff and volunteers, sometimes, you know, spreading the word, marketing is the last thing that happens. And I think a lot of people in nonprofits will tell you that.
Not only that, but I think that we're able to get maybe somebody doesn't know that an organization
exactly.
is in our area
exactly.
or in their, you know, in their region. And they listen to Ozarks at Large. They hear about an organization mm-hmm. and they're like, hey, I didn't know that service was out there.
Right.
And so we're able to, you know, connect this organization with members of the community.
Absolutely. I know just even from working here, I've been able to discover so many organizations that I had no idea existed. I suppose it's because I may not have personally needed the services, and so it wasn't something I sought, mm-hmm. you know, something I sought out. But it's awesome to know that these places are out there for those who need them. And I have definitely been able to speak about them now when someone is looking for that service, either a place to volunteer their time or needing a place, you know, they need the services of that organization.
They need some place to turn to, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So, no, that's something, that's one of the ways that I feel like we help support this community, and in turn, the community supports us.
Right. And you can go to our website right now if you value this information that we are providing with you, and supportkuaf.com.
And thank you. Mm-hmm. It is Monday, October 28th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now inside Studio 123 is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hey.
Hello.
So are you about the right age for the Backstreet Boys?
I am exactly the right age for the Backstreet Boys.
Excellent. So you might possibly know who Aaron Carter is.
Yes, little brother of Nick Carter, who was a member or is a member of the Backstreet Boys. Yes.
Well, apparently Aaron Carter is back on tour for the first time in 8 years.
Oh.
And he is going to be at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville tonight.
Really?
Apparently he had a big album called Aaron's Party.
Yes, he was much younger than Nick, and it was very popular with the preteens.
He's only 25 now,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he's much younger than almost all of us. Well, not you so much, but he's calling the new tour the After Party.
Okay.
And he is doing music that people like, plus some new stuff he's working on.
Okay.
Apparently he was on Dancing with the Stars.
I vaguely remember that, yes.
And then he was in the Fantastics off-Broadway.
Was he now?
And he promises he'll sing I Want Candy, which is apparently important.
It is important.
There you go.
It was a good one.
9 o'clock tonight at George's, $12 admission. You can get meet and greet tickets for an additional $45.
Okay. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Back to you, Kyle.
Thank you, Antoinette. In about 4 minutes on this edition of Ozarks, what landscape architecture and democracy have in common? Christina will talk with Randy Hester, a landscape architect who was on the University of Arkansas campus last month. Their conversation ahead on Ozarks at Large. The Rogers Historical Museum presents Art from the Earth on exhibit now through February 2014. This exhibit features the museum's own collection as well as other collections to illustrate the wide range of pottery used and sometimes made in Arkansas over the centuries. Located in historic downtown Rogers, 621-1154 or rogersarkansas.com/museum for more information. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. Few items to take note of on this Monday. The Beaver Watershed Alliance is hosting the final meeting in a series of 5 watershed outreach and project introduction meetings for the West Fork Watershed Opportunity Assessment. The last one will be tomorrow night from 6 until 8 at the Winslow Fire Department on Highway 71 in Winslow. It's the last in the series of 5 community stakeholder meetings regarding water quality problems and solutions within the West Fork of the White River. The meetings have been one part watershed project introduction, one part community education, one part community input. And speaking of public input sessions, 2 are scheduled for the immediate future to discuss the future of the Walton Arts Center on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. There is one set for tomorrow night at 6 in the McBride Studio inside the Walton Arts Center, and another Wednesday at noon in the McBride Studio. Participants will see new renderings of proposed renovations for the Walton Arts Center on Dixon Street and get an update on the timeline, as well as provide feedback and ask questions about the project. And Heritage Month 2014 in Arkansas will be dedicated to Arkansas foods and food traditions. Organizations throughout the state are invited to begin planning Heritage Month projects and events that support the theme, Come to the Table, Celebrating the Flavors of Arkansas. Applications for grants of up to $5,000 to help fund Heritage Month events next May will be accepted through December 9th. Grants are available to help communities develop local events and projects for Heritage Month that takes place in May 2014. The grants are designed to help foster awareness and enjoyment of Arkansas heritage and to assist nonprofit and community groups in planning and implementing meaningful Arkansas Heritage Month projects. If you'd like to know more information, there is an application packet available online at arkansasheritage.com. And a note of congratulations to Jack Robertson, a senior at Bentonville High School, for being named the first Wendy's Golf Player of the Year. Coaches and school administrators were eligible to make nominations for the award during the period of October 4th through the 21st. Jack finished second in the Class 7A state tournament with a 2-day total of 148.
Randy Hester is an emeritus professor of landscape architecture and environmental planning at the University of California, Berkeley, and a co-founder of the Center for Ecological Democracy. He engages citizens directly in the creation of their landscapes and cities. Originally from North Carolina, he resides there once again and has won the All-America City Award for his work in Raleigh, among many other awards and projects, such as the Virginia Dare Award for work in Manteo, North Carolina. Last month, Hester visited the University of Arkansas campus as part of the Fay Jones School of Architecture lecture series. He stopped by the Carver Center for Public Radio for a conversation with me. Both a sociologist and an architect, I began by asking him how he brought the two studies together.
When I was in school, I was in landscape architecture, and it was the only goal of success of landscape architecture, like architecture, was how beautiful is your building? It was really a beauty theory, and it was superficial. It was how well does it photograph? And I was in school in the civil rights era, and Frank Lloyd Wright was inspiring, but so was Martin Luther King Jr. And so I kept thinking, you know, how designs aren't, they may be pretty, but people aren't able to live in them very well. And there were some pretty bad things that designers were doing. And so I started taking sociology and realized, boy, I can take this right back to my studio, and it changed my design. It was amazing. And so then, since then, I have always tried to figure out what are the patterns of the people and what are the patterns likely to be and how then can we accommodate conflict and how can we make the place so that people can really love it. Because that's the goal. If people don't love their city, they aren't going to take care of it. They're not going to be good stewards of it. They're not, and the city's going to suffer, and the democracy's going to suffer.
We here in Fayetteville kind of have an unofficial slogan, or you see bumper stickers all around that say "Keep Fayetteville Funky." Uh-huh. You know, very similar to the "Keep Austin Weird." But uh-huh. Yeah, so uh-huh. I mean, I guess that's kind of our identity a little bit, maybe.
Uh huh.
Yeah,
and I think that identity is really appealing. And small cities are now unbelievably appealing. I mean, it used to be that every kid who graduates from college wanted to go to really big cities. More and more, they are choosing the small cities. They're more livable. There's a higher quality of life.
Affordable.
They're more affordable. The industry now is really, it is able to locate in places that are really place-based as opposed to just economy-based. So, yeah. I mean, funky is a really great identity. Funky is a great identity. It's a little bit like I'm thinking now of, we worked in Haleiwa, Hawaii, and there were two slogans, keep the country country and no rush, rush. No rush, rush. Mm-hmm. They were committed. I don't think very many people there, not many native Hawaiians had read Thoreau, who said one of your greatest powers is not to ever be hurried.
Right.
But they knew the value of slowing life down. And funky is really, it's cool.
I think we like it. Yeah, yeah. Well, I know that another one of your areas or one of your topics is ecological democracy. And you've mentioned democracy even this morning. Mm-hmm. So does that really just mean, a democracy for the people, by the people? Is that essentially what you mean by ecological democracy?
Yeah, I think...
Citizens taking a hand in it?
Yeah, and we have to. I mean, we all know that... democracy is not like going to the Razorbacks football game in which we are spectators. It's a spectator sport. We all have to be part of the 11, or a democracy is not very strong. And I would say I'm committed to design landscape architecture, city planning, primarily focusing on making the democracy strong. I believe that the only way we can do that is to shift the focus from short-term profit, which largely, it's not just profit for corporations, it's profit for you and me. That is, what's good for me today and tomorrow is largely what's driving the democracy. And I think that we have to push it towards ecological. The democracy has to be more informed, and policy has to be more generated on the basis of ecological principles. So, to me, and Aldo Leopold said the first principle of ecology is that land is a community. And Martin Luther King Jr. said that he was cognizant that we are tied in an inescapable web of mutuality, a community. And so community then becomes the central piece, I think, of an ecological democracy. Because if the economy, I don't really know about Walmart, but I bet that Walmart is more responsible here than they are in North Carolina, because they don't have any commitment to North Carolina other than it's a place where they sell stuff, employ people, and make money. Here, this is their place.
This is their home.
This is home. And so place is important. Community is important. And I believe that we can create an ecological democracy. It will require a shift in what we think of as democracy. And I think about it in terms of, I wish that Patrick Henry had said, I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty and give me responsibility. Now, he didn't say the responsibility part.
No.
And if he had, we would have a different mindset, I think, about our democracy. We think of it as something that Thomas Jefferson and those guys gave us, but we are the only way it's going to continue to be strong. It's up to us, and we have to be responsible for it.
Well, when you talk about community, you know, I have my, well, really, my parents have, you know, these 80 acres. And down the street, you know, I mean, Michelle could have her, you know, home on one, you know, acre. And, you know, so we each have all these individual places. Mm-hmm. How do we work with our individual land and places and still build a community?
Well,
Did I phrase that very well?
Yeah,
I don't know.
You phrased it beautifully, and it is the dilemma, I think, of our time. I think that we have become increasingly selfish, and we do not particularly have what's called, in, I think, political science, self-interest well understood. And that the self-interest has to be integrated with the responsibility to community. I mean, and this is what Aldo Leopold, I think, was telling us about land, that we cannot separate your mom's 80 acres from what's around it. It's the creatures, the fox that's going from the next property to your property doesn't know the difference. The water that's falling on her land and running either on top of the earth or into a cavern and somewhere, they're all interconnected. And I think we have to understand that's what a community is. It's these interconnections. And of course, we should be concerned about our own personal needs, but our personal wants are really what's getting in the way of community, I think. And design addresses this. Design can either encourage selfishness or it can encourage community. And community requires work. And it does require sacrifice of some of my freedoms. That is, I have to cooperate with you, I have to at least acknowledge that your values are as legitimate as mine. And most Americans today, we don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And we have become so successful that we have a tendency to say, well, screw my neighbors. That's not so good.
For sure. Yeah. I'm not going to cut my bush or, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, how can the community, how can the citizens, the community work with the city planners and the city administration?
Yeah, that's a really, that's a key thing because it is a partnership. I mean, a lot of the historically citizen participation was cast against the city. It was cast against big business. And I think we all now realize that wasn't community either. That the city government is the keeper in some ways of the democratic process, and we need to be sure that the government is open and transparent. We've just been through a really nasty process in Durham recently, in which a parking study for downtown was done. And there's some sophisticated citizens who realize that parking is really important, and where it is important. And citizens aren't usually concerned about those kinds of studies, right? You only get really mad when they start taking your parking space mm-hmm. away. Well, these citizens were proactive.
Or start to charge for it.
Or start to charge for it, right. And this was a big issue because the pioneers in downtown Durham, when we moved to downtown, there were only 21 people living in our census tract. Now there's several thousand, and there's 2,000 more units of housing being built. So it's pretty soon there are going to be a lot of people living downtown. Now, to attract the pioneers to downtown, they gave us free parking. And now they want to charge $90 a month. Well, we don't drive.
Right.
So we don't care.
Yeah.
Except we want them to be honest in the process, the city to be honest in the process. And they told us we will have a series of public workshops, and we will figure out the parking for downtown, and we will work with the citizens. Well, as it turns out, in 6 months ago, they adopted these fee increases without informing. They never had the workshops, and they did it pretty much in secret. Well, people are really furious, mm-hmm. and they should be for all sorts of reasons. So the city has to learn to be transparent and honest and fair. And there's no need to try to sneak something by Americans anymore, I don't think. I mean, there certainly used to be a time
right.
when you probably needed to sneak something by. Citizens have to become, this is a matter of learning to walk in each other's shoes. What's the city planner? What are his shoes? What do his shoes feel like? What does the city council person's shoes feel like? And then, of course, the citizens have to learn how city government works. And many people don't want to take the time, and it takes time. I think that in the same way that we are expected to tithe to the church, we should give 10% of our lives to democracy, which means then we would know
becoming
how the
informed.
Process works.
Yeah.
We would be informed because being informed is really key, I think, for citizens.
Well, and, you know, and the city planner is really a citizen also. I mean,
yeah. I mean,
in a different position.
If they, they play multiple roles. And indeed, if they live in the place, they have an incredibly complex set of hats they're wearing.
All right. Well, I don't think I have anything else, Randy.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate your time.
Thanks for doing it.
Randy Hester is an emeritus professor of landscape architecture and environmental planning at the University of California, Berkeley. He now resides in North Carolina. He has worked on many projects, including the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial in Washington, D.C., and has authored works such as Design for Ecological Democracy. I spoke with Hester last month while he visited the University of Arkansas campus. This is Ozarks at Large.
The restaurant at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art serves modern American comfort food with an Ozarks twist. Wednesday and Friday evenings offer culture hour from 5 to 7 with drinks, live music, and dinner until 9 p.m. featuring a monthly chef's menu. Dinner reservations suggested. More information is available online at crystalbridges.org.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism in the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Goshen.
Goshen, yes.
I live
out that way.
Out that way, so out, yeah. Out Highway 45.
So why not? Shout out to Christina's neck of the woods.
Yes, yes.
And a special shout out and thank you to everyone who has made their pledge so far as part of our on-air fall fundraiser, our phone volunteers home for the evening. And thanks so much to them who show up bright and early at 6 in the morning to help us out all day. But if you have not made your contribution yet and you would like to do so, our website is always open. You can go to supportkuaf.com right now and make your pledge there.
Right. KUAF is a community radio station, and Ozarks at Large brings our listeners stories from the community. I feel like that's been a really strong theme on today's show. Randy Hester was just discussing how citizens should take part in the design of their community.
Right.
And that's a lot like the way KUAF works. Our listeners take part in the radio station.
They do. They are a big part of the radio station here. We've had from people volunteering to answer our phones to our contributing listeners, the ones who call during the pledge drive year after year or who pledge online now that we have our website, supportkuaf.com, and or our sustaining members, as we've mentioned before. If you don't want to give a lump sum all at once, you can make payments. You can sign up to make payments throughout the year. Any amount is absolutely worth it, and every dollar counts. We understand that people, you know, some of our listeners are blessed to have, you know, money is not an issue for them.
Larger budgets than others,
yes. And for some, we know you're on a fixed income. But I do know, regardless of where you are in the spectrum of money, that a lot of people, we have a variety of listeners, and everybody wants to help. And so every little bit helps. So if you can only give $5, that's great.
It is great.
If you can give $1,000 and be a part of the NPR Society, that is awesome as well. We welcome all listeners to show their support. I mean, each and every dollar helps us get that much closer to our final goal.
It takes the community. It really does take the community working together to make a public radio station work. We could not be here without the community. And again, every little bit adds up. So whether you can donate $10, $120, $500, please do so now at our website, supportkuaf.com.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. For our colleague Kyle Kellums, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening, and have a pleasant evening.